argument, United States versus Polinsky. Mr. Glenn.
May it please the court, excuse me, my name is Stephen Glenn. I appear here on behalf of Jeff Polinsky, excuse me, who is the appellant in this matter. As the court knows, I will not go through the brief's facts in any depth, but I think a short précis may be helpful.
What does your client stand to benefit in this case?
I'm sorry?
Why does your client have any standing, and what's he going to benefit from?
He will be able to use the funds that are returned to the campaign fund to pay the contributors who the Wisconsin law requires him to pay.
Aren't those the same people that didn't apply to get the money from as it is?
Some are, some are not, Your Honor.
He doesn't have to pay those back that don't apply, does he?
Well, I believe he does, Judge Coffey. I think that under Wisconsin law, there is nothing that says that a declination of restitution disentitles the person who made an illegal contribution to get that money back.
Illegal contribution?
Yes.
From their point of view, too?
From Wisconsin point of view.
I see. Is the donor also engaged in a criminal act when he makes the contribution?
No, it's illegal for the alderman to accept it, not for the corporation to give it.
Corporation can give it without any criminal action.
It looks like the application of the law. It's not been applied against corporations. It's been applied against the public official.
But if you say that the campaign fund will be dissolved, if not all of the money in it has been claimed by the donors, who gets the residuum? Does he get it?
No, Your Honor. Again, Wisconsin law addresses that. The money is not to go to the individual. It is to go either to a designated list of recipients under Wisconsin campaign law or to charities. It can go to pay.
Is he concerned about somebody suing him to get their money back? Is that it?
Well, he's concerned about having his campaign fund closed because,
that's the temptation. He keeps it open.
I have to go outside the record to answer your question, Your Honor.
This has happened before.
Sure.
I was crazy if Boston got elected when he was in the penitentiary, but,
That's not here. I can say that it is clear that what Mr. Polinsky wants is to close up his account in accordance with Wisconsin law.
I see.
It's really that simple.
Well, you're saying Wisconsin law says that he has to give it back.
Yes, Your Honor. It does, and as a matter of fact, in the
broad language in the law that says that.
I think it's 11.38.
What does it say? Can you tell me?
I think I have it. Any individual, ellipsis, who receives funds in violation of this section shall promptly return such funds to the contributor or donate the funds to the Common School Fund or to a charitable organization at the treasurer's option.
So the person only has to give it back to him. He can give it to the school fund,
sure,
or to a charity.
Yes, sir. He cannot keep it for himself is the point. But he has action that should be taken. And the legislative priority for that action is to give it back to the people who gave it to him.
But they would not have a cause of action under the section you just described, because he has the option of giving it to the school.
I would think they would not.
Yeah. You expressed a concern in your brief or on behalf of him that he might, if all this money is paid to the victims' fund in accordance with the judge's order, that he might be sued also?
Well,
that he
may be forced to come up with his own money to give to the three acknowledged recipients.
So Wisconsin might not recognize this donation to the Crime Victims Fund as satisfying his obligation under Wisconsin law.
That's the concern, Your Honor.
The obligation of Wisconsin law is what you just read, isn't it?
Yes, sir.
And that gives him an option. He doesn't have to pay it back at all.
That's correct.
And so if there's no narrow door there, he doesn't have to pay anything back.
Well, no, if I may, Your Honor, I think that what the Wisconsin law is saying is that it has to be paid to one of these three entities.
It's only fair.
Well, it doesn't really say assuming it's there.
Well, it says all money he got.
It says an individual who receives funds But if the funds have been received and used for legitimate right. campaign purposes and are no longer there, and the campaign committee is accused by, I don't know, the state elections board of spending them appropriately but not having taken them inappropriately, then other funds are going to have to be used to pay back
right.
those.
So I have to pay that back.
Yeah,
that makes sense. I understand.
And let me make one point clear. I'm sorry.
Yeah, go ahead,
I don't want to be seen as making a representation that I know that this is what will happen.
Right.
Nor can I make a representation based on prior precedents, because frankly, this is essentially a case of first impression on these, what I will acknowledge to be pretty bizarre facts. And frankly, I mean, as with Mr. Flynn, who preceded me and the other counsel, I was trial counsel on this as well, and I'm saying, gee, I probably should not have had Mr. Polinsky put this amount of money into the clerk's office on the early side of the restitution. We probably should have done what happened in Judge Stabenow's court, which is, let's wait and see who asks for restitution. And if they don't ask for it, then it'll stay in the campaign fund. But we emptied the campaign fund, we emptied Mr. Polinsky's retirement fund, he borrowed money, and this is in the record, he borrowed money from family and friends to come up with that restitution money, because he wanted to make it clear that wherever that money went, it wouldn't come back to him. And under what we're suggesting in this case, it shouldn't come back to him.
So you're saying, to sum it up, that his violation of the campaign finance law created a debt, and that we don't really know whether the judge's order sending it to the crime victims fund would be considered under Wisconsin law to have satisfied the debt.
That's precisely correct.
Wait, how many more claims have been filed for money than other than what you list in your brief?
I would have to go outside the record. I will simply say I don't know of any, Judge. My understanding is that at the time Judge Clavert entered the order, fewer than 5% of the people who had contributed money had asked for its return. And I think I'm running into my rebuttal time. So,
okay, well,
thank you
very much, Mr. Glenn. Mr. Koenig?
I can't speak German very well. It's Koenig.
It
means king.
How do you pronounce your name?
I pronounce it Koenig.
Really?
You missed Bauer is right.
Koenig is far more prevalent here in the Midwest. I'm from back east.
That's a nice German pronunciation. It's Koenig.
May it please the court, you obviously know my name. I represent the United States of America.
I know your name. We're not
in
sure how
action.
We want to pronounce it. That's the
Rather than plow over ground that's covered in the brief, I would like to accomplish three things here this morning with my time. The first is to update the court on the status of the restitution money that's been paid into the court by Mr. Polinsky. My understanding as of yesterday was that the lion's share of that money had been forwarded to the Crime Victims Fund, consistent with Judge Clavert's order, and that $1,850 remains, which represents the amount claimed by victims. It's not clear to me why the clerk's office is holding on to that $1,850, but I wanted to let you know about the status. It may affect how you choose to fashion relief, depending on how this case turns out. I would like to comment, secondly, briefly on the standing argument in Mr. Polinsky's reply brief. And thirdly, I think I am obligated to comment on the possible ramifications of a Seventh Circuit case that I stumbled across late yesterday, and that is United States versus Randall, 324 F3rd 550.
May I have that again, please?
Yes, sir. 324 F3rd 550.
Thank you.
That's a case from this court last year. On the standing issue, we raised that in our brief because it was unclear that Mr. Polinsky had been personally and concretely and adversely affected by Judge Clavert's decision to award these monies, the unclaimed portion of the restitution to the Crime Victims Fund. And the standing remains unclear to me. The defendant says that he has repayment obligations under state law.
Well, he says he may, so there's some uncertainty.
And in that regard, Your Honor, I would just note, as I do in my brief, that standing cannot be a matter of conjecture.
Oh, yes, it can. Of course it can. I mean, the harms that people base their lawsuits on are very often conjectural and probabilistic. You know, there's a danger of something.
Well, just take the Fifth Amendment. Sure. It's fairly speculative when you start to talk about it. Prosecution may not agree with the thing, so you're saying it's very speculative, but you're still entitled to take the Fifth Amendment on the grounds that, in your mind at least, there's a possibility you might be charged with a crime. How about that one?
Well, I'm sure that's correct, Your Honor. Mr.
Glynn, oh, bet it is.
Mr. Glynn wouldn't even say, for example, that civil lawsuits were likely or imminent.
No, he just said it's possible.
Right, and I would acknowledge that it's possible, although the two sections of state law that are cited by the appellant in his brief do not necessarily mean that Mr. Paulinski is going to be personally.
No, they don't necessarily. It's an unsettled issue of state law.
Well, if I could just address those sections briefly. I mean, 11.19 doesn't say that Mr. Paulinski is personally obligated to.
Have you taken your position that if possibility raises the same standing issue, why bother with telling us what it says? There is the possibility, you will admit, that somebody may sue him.
Why don't you move on to the Randall?
I would like to know more about that, but I'll concede the possibility, Your Honor. And the other point, I guess, I'd like to make with respect to standing is that...
Forget standing. Go on to the Randall case. Your time is going to expire before you know.
Randall holds basically, it follows the statutory definition of victim in the Mandatory Victim Restitution Act very closely. That citation is 18 United States Code 3663A2. And the case holds really that the only proper recipients of restitution are those who fall within the definition of victim, unless the parties agree in the plea agreement specifically that the restitution can go to a non-victim.
Which they didn't.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Your problem, and you don't address it in your brief, as I understand 3663A and 3664, there are only two situations under which it is possible to order restitution to non-victims. And one is if there's an agreement to that effect in the plea agreement, and the other is if the victims themselves assign their rights out. And neither of these statutory preconditions to restitution are present here. And your brief does not suggest any statutory basis for this restitution order.
That's right, Your Honor. And if the analysis that you just laid out controls, it's also the analysis in the Randall case, neither of the options before the district judge was permitted by law. What I think saves our position is a plain error analysis, which was also done in Randall.
I understand the plain error. I understand how you are saved by that, because it's perfectly clear on the face of the statute that there is no basis for the order. Unless you have a statutory provision, a statutory rabbit to pull out of your hat, there just is not a basis for the order. It's an illegal order.
Well, Your Honor, I would argue that the error was not plain in the sense of being obvious. It certainly eluded counsel in this case and the district judge. And I would say also, I would also point the court's attention.
But wait, every time plain error is argued, it's something that's eluded the district judge, right? Otherwise, there wouldn't be an appeal. And counsel.
And counsel, otherwise, it'd be in the record.
Right.
Okay. My last fallback argument, Your Honors, has to do with the final part of the plain error analysis, which is whether to take notice of the plain error.
So that gets back to the standing issue, right? That is, you probably think there's no harm done because his liability under Wisconsin law is conjectural.
Well, the standard, as I understand it, is whether the error would seriously affect the fairness, integrity, or public perception of judicial proceedings. And in this case, where the defendant has clearly disclaimed any interest in the restitution amount, unclaimed.
That doesn't give the judge a free rein to do whatever he wants to.
Well, the government isn't arguing that Judge Clifford had boundless discretion.
He had
decided to give the money to his favorite charity or something. That would arguably be an abuse of discretion.
Maybe this is his favorite charity.
Well, it is, at least in the shadows and penumbras of the restitution statute, and as much as the Crime Victims Fund is mentioned there.
I don't think discretion comes into the picture. There's plenty of discretion in the sentencing process, but it has to be he couldn't sentence him to wear a dunce cap or something, couldn't he? Could he?
No, sir, but I think in this case what we're talking about, if the standard is whether, assuming there was an error and assuming it was a plain error.
Well, wait a second. There is, you agree now, having discovered Randall, there was no statutory basis for the restitution order.
Or for the proposal favored by Mr. Polinsky, yes. That would be correct.
I don't know what you mean by proposal favored by him. He just says the restitution order is illegal. Now, what happens to the money? That's something else.
Well, the two proposals that were in front of the district judge were both extra statutory.
Well, I don't understand how the U.S. attorney can make an extra statutory sentencing proposal to a district judge. I mean, don't you look at the statutes before you suggest what the judge should sentence the person to?
Yes, Your Honor, we do, and I think the determination was made in this case that because Congress has provided that in certain circumstances awards can be made.
But not in these circumstances. You could have negotiated in your plea agreement with Polinsky that the money could go to non-victims. You didn't do that.
That's true, Your Honor. I won't try to argue my way around that. I still think, again, if the Randall analysis controls...
What do you mean, if? Do you want us to overrule Randall and create a non-statutory basis for sentences?
I think in this case what the court has to ask itself is whether it will take notice of the plain error. And the standard, as I indicated before, is whether the error would seriously affect the fairness, integrity, or public perception of the judicial proceedings. And what we have here...
Well, I think people would think it's pretty strange for the Justice Department to be defending a sentence that had no statutory basis.
I see that my time is out. I guess the only thing that I would add, Your Honors, is that...
Can we have some extra time to finish?
Sure, of course.
Go ahead. Finish your argument.
What we have in this case is a defendant who agreed to restitution in the plea agreement, later agreed to pay the full restitution amount of $39,324. And I would suggest that returning the money to Mr. Polinsky would be a perverse outcome in light of his own concessions in this case. So we would ask you to affirm.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Koenig. And Mr. Glenn, how much time does he have? 3 minutes? Do you have anything further?
I have just one statement, and that is, it is not the purpose of this appeal to seek the return of the money to Mr. Polinsky. The purpose is to seek the return of the money to the campaign fund so that Mr. Polinsky can carry out his duties in terminating that fund. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much to both counsel. The case will be taken under advisement, and court will be in recess until 9:30 tomorrow.